In a world brimming with complexity, few creatures embody harmony like the honeybee. With tireless precision, she dances from bloom to bloom, each motion guided by millennia upon millennia of instinct, each act in service to the whole. And then there are the beekeepers, watchful stewards of this ancient symbiosis. Part agri-scientist, part poet, they move along their hives with the efficiency of Moe, Larry, and Curly, tending to the bees' needs as best they can comprehend, and with the infrequency of a waterfall in the Sahara, sometimes running off, flapping and flailing like a penguin on a hot sidewalk. This is their journey.
Welcome, welcome to Bee Love Beekeeping, presented by Man Lake. A lot of us complain about some of the difficulties in beekeeping. Others put their brains together and do something about it. I'm referring specifically to all of the heavy lifting. And frankly, if you're like me, I admit I don't do my varroa washes as often as I should because it's so difficult lifting the honey supers, maybe three of them at 60 pounds each, finding somewhere to put them, eventually putting them back on. There has got to be a better way, and our guest today and his father have figured that one out. First, this week's headline from Arizona about a wild and crazy beekeeping story that unfortunately turned tragic. A pedestrian was fatally struck after a swarm of bees escaped their container and began stinging the driver that was transporting them. This happened on November 8th in Mesa, Arizona in the morning, and according to authorities, the driver was in the process of transporting a swarm of bees when they began to escape their container. The bees quickly spread throughout the cab of the transport vehicle and began aggressively stinging the driver. Sadly, while suffering multiple stings, the driver lost control of the vehicle and struck a pedestrian before crashing into a pole. Unfortunately, the pedestrian lost their life as a result of the accident. The driver was taken to the hospital following the crash and treated for minor injuries. I'm not quite sure what to do with this. I'm just going to let it sit for a minute with the reminder for all of us to think safety first in every aspect of our beekeeping. On a much lighter note, research into the mental well-being impact of being connected with bees is also taking flight. A recent Irish study linked caring for bees with stress reduction, emotional regulation, social correctedness, and a sense of purpose. An Italian study found that it fosters positive emotions, psychological flow, and feelings of amazement. Bees are known for batting well above their weight when it comes to supporting human well-being. You know, we thank them for sustaining our food supply, maintaining biodiversity, and producing ingredients that are used in skincare, medicine, and elsewhere. Now, it seems that they may also hold a key to our emotional wellness, as a growing number of people are discovering that caring for bees is a powerful way to nurture their inner calm. While specific beekeeping studies on mental health are still emerging, psychologist Tosh Balakis says the skills involved in caring for bees, such as attention restoration, gentle physical movement, and sensory grounding, align strongly with what's already known to work well for mental health. What makes it so fascinating is that it's a blend of science and soul, says Balakis. We know from environmental and occupational psychology that engaging in structured, purposeful outdoor activities can lower stress hormones and improve mood regulation. Time spent in nature, combined with caring for another living thing, boosts well-being. Now, for today's guest, we're heading down under to the east coast of Australia for a discussion with Cedar Anderson, co-founder of Flowhive. Welcome to Bee Love Beekeeping, everybody. And we're going a long ways. We're going clear down under to meet with Cedar Anderson today. Cedar, how are you?
Thank you very much for having me, Eric. And I'm great. It's a beautiful sunny day here. Good for beekeeping.
Why don't you let everybody know, where in Australia are you?
So we're in Byron Bay, which is a little town on the east coast of Australia, and it's a subtropical region, which means the bees forage all year round. And sometimes in winter, we get some really good honey flows too, depending on the weather.
What kinds of things do they forage on?
So in the wintertime, they'll be foraging on the paper bark, which the rains set off. And then in the springtime, you've got a whole lot of things flowering and you get really light honeys from the forest and also from the farmland with the macadamia trees. And then the rest of the year, we tend to get the darker honeys, and especially through the winter, you get honeys that are almost black. So we've got the range from almost black through to almost clear. It's pretty neat.
It's cool. Well, most of us beekeepers, we tend to whine and complain about things like, oh man, that super weighs 80 pounds. I don't want to have to pick that thing up. Or extracting is such a big hassle. You and your father are people that just did something about it instead of complaining about it. Tell us who you are. Tell us what you guys have come up with.
So I used to keep bees in the conventional way, selling honey to the local shops by the bucketful. And it was through that I went, hang on, this is a real pain. Harvesting in the conventional way, you know how it goes. You've got the extraction room, which was the shed I lived in. You've got a big sticky mess. You've got the centrifuge. You've got the sieving buckets, the decapping knives, the stainless steel benches, and a whole stack of sticky boxes getting ants and wax moth and so on, right? A normal kind of conventional setup. I thought, hang on a second. Isn't there a better way to do this? Can't we just tap the honey straight out of the hive? And that thought's what sparked a decade-long journey with my father and I inventing the flow hive. Now we simply, and I still get mesmerized by watching it, you turn the handle on the hive and the honey flows straight out, straight into your jars, bypassing that whole extracting room. So it's like your extraction room built right into your hive, if you like. It's kind of not necessarily apples for apples either, because a single flow hive box can take the place of multiple sticky boxes, if you like, because you can keep tapping the honey out and storing it in jars on the shelf instead of boxes on the hive to batch harvest.
Well, that makes sense. So like a lot of us, we're really proud of showing our, gee, look at my hives with five supers on top. So they're 10 feet tall, which is completely impractical, and things like that. In some areas, how often do you call it tapping the hive?
Yeah, we call it harvesting. I mean, the conventional term is robbing, but we tend to call it harvesting. And that sort of delineates between the robbing behavior of bees and humans in a way. So we call it harvesting the hive. Yeah, now a process of just walking out to the hives with your jars and ready to go. One of the things that we really didn't set out to invent, but has become an amazing kind of side benefit, is the way you can isolate different flavors from the single hive. Because if you imagine the bees are filling up the frames as they go from the center, slowly moving out, then you get a variety of honeys in each frame. And then you start harvesting a couple of those and they'll fill it with whatever's flowering right now. So you get this checkerboarding and these beautiful different flavors and colors coming out of a single hive, which I find fascinating. I mean, I really love honey. So to be able to taste those differences and isolate those differences is a real benefit.
Well, I would guess, especially in a place like where you are, where you have different things flowering, different nectar flows, what, half a dozen or so different ones during the year?
Yeah, I mean, there'd be hundreds of different flowers flowering, but there's a few key ones that really do go, and you can get more of a monofloral flavor. And one of them is the paper bark. Another one we get in the springtime is the Goya or wild quince is a nicer name for it, but that's a really blow your taste buds off, really light colored honey. And the Melaleuca, on the other hand, paper bark, is a is a almost burnt toffee, darker honey.
Well, and most of us, even though we have various flows, some of the things you mentioned earlier, it's such a hassle harvesting honey. Just the cleanup alone, let alone pulling frames, getting wax cappings off, all that kind of stuff, that we only want to do it once or twice a year. So we end up with what we call wildflower honey because it's just a mixture of everything. But yeah, that would be fun to be able to say, okay, you know, this month we have these fruit trees flowering and I'd like to taste the honey from those. And then next month it's something else. I'd like to taste that. Makes sense.
And there's a beautiful little feature where you can actually just harvest part of a frame if you're just curious. And you can even do that even before it's ripe if you want to. Just crack the last little cell line and taste that flavor coming in. And to me, that really helps me connect what's flowering as to what honey is being produced and be able to work out which flowers are determining which flavor.
Let's talk about Flow Hive for a minute specifically. I like the business side of things, and you guys did a crowdfunding thing that everybody saw. I mean, everybody, even whether you were a beekeeper or not. So congrats on that, because that is not an easy thing to do. To you and your dad, big congratulations on that. Give me just a rough idea. I don't need any sacred information, but about how many Flow Hives have you sold?
So it's upwards of 150,000 now to 130 different countries in the world. The US is a very popular place for Flow Hives, as well as Australia. It's been this, I mean, real joy to have a global community. And, you know, I still pinch myself, of course, amazing success for our invention. But this global community that sprung up is something that we've learned so much from. And every week I spend an hour head to camera answering questions from all over the world. And it's fascinating to hear them coming in from all corners of the globe and have that rich knowledge of beekeeping being shared in a global way.
Who do you find mostly are your typical buyers? Is it beginners? Who is it?
So we get about half beginners and half existing beekeepers. And we don't get the large scale commercial beekeepers. We tend to get the small scale, what we call boutique honey producers, where you've just got 30 or 40 hives in your yard and you're jarring up your honey and selling it to the local shops and so on. What we find is clever beekeepers will actually market the fact that it's single frame honeys and has this higher flavor retention, which has been proven by universities and things, because the honey hasn't been processed by a whole lot of machinery. It hasn't been mixed with 30 other hives' honeys and so on. So you do get this flavor profile really present. Clever boutique commercial beekeepers are going direct to jar, bypassing the production shed, all of the decapping line, all of that, and even the bottling machine. They're just bottling it right up at the hives and then able to tell that story and not only harvest in an easier way, but also fetch a much higher price for their honey.
I don't have one of your Flow Hives yet. I know some people that do that absolutely love them. I also know some people that naively bought them. Okay. And I'm sure you've heard this, and this is no slam on you. This is probably a slam on people not doing their research, but they saw the stuff from your crowdfunding, bought a Flow Hive, set it up, and then in the backyard, and then went, okay, where's the bees and where's my honey? And they didn't realize they had to not only buy bees, but they had to learn how to be a beekeeper. And I think that's something that we need to talk about here, is the Flow Hive doesn't do all your beekeeping for you. There's still a lot that you have to learn. Would you address that?
Absolutely, yes. Like any beehive, the bees still need the same care they've always had. And that is different in different regions. So local knowledge is good to know what level of intervention or care you need to give your hive. The Flow Hive invention itself is specific to the honey harvesting. And although we've built more features into the Flow Hive to assist your beekeeping bit, the Flow Hive invention with our flow frames is basically the extraction room built into the hive. And as far as the bees looking after them, it's much the same as it's always been. So we get a wide variety from people that get totally fanatical about their bees and become amazing beekeepers. And like you say, beekeepers that start and actually don't want to put in the effort to look after their bees. And I think that's the same across any kind of beekeeping or hobby pursuit. You get the people that just jump in and don't want to do the learning, and get other people that really do. So what we did about it, because that became very apparent early on. I mean, when we did our crowdfunding, we were expecting existing beekeepers to buy our flow frames. What we found is that most people wanted the whole kit and caboodle, the hive, and at least half of them were new to beekeeping at that moment. So all of a sudden, we realized that we needed to educate. And out of the gate, we started creating lots of online training material to address the new beekeeper and what they needed to know and what they needed to learn. And we've been doing that ever since, creating an enormous amount of training material.
Are you a beekeeper who loves sharing tips, asking questions, and showing off your latest honey haul? Then join the Hive. Introducing the Man Lake Beekeeping Community on Facebook, your new go-to for everything honeybees. Whether you're struggling with mites, trying a new winterization method, or just need to know what that weird thing on your frame is, our group is a supportive, spam-free zone for beginners and pros alike. Stop scrolling through endless forums and connect directly with beekeepers and the professionals at Man Lake in one buzzing place. We'll put a link to it down in the show notes. Just click over and join up.
I also jump in front of the camera an hour still every week answering questions to anybody who wants to ask. On top of that, we've put a dedicated online training course at thebeekeeper.org with experts from all over the world that have tuned in. So it's not only our knowledge, but a lot of experts from the USA and Europe and so on. That course gets rave reviews and is also an amazing fundraiser for the bees. And we're really proud to support a whole lot of initiatives from funds raised from thebeekeeper.org. So education is super key to our mission, if you like.
We're going to put your website down in the show notes. And if you have a special link to that once a week, 1 hour thing, I want to go on there and think up a really hard question for you, okay?
Please do. Please do.
You probably know 100 times more than I do, so I can't stump you, but it'd be fun to try.
I'm sure there's some things that are specific to your region that we don't have. But yeah, there's certainly a lot of great questions that come in.
By the way, one of the things that I love is that you and all your videos and the people whose flow hives I've seen tend to leave a natural wood look. I assume you're using varnish or oil or something to preserve that wood. I absolutely love that. That just is a beautiful thing. I have one that is a wax dipped, and so it looks like it's varnished of a regular Langstroth hive, and I just love the look of them.
It is a beautiful thing to have that natural wood look, and you know, and I think people also like the aesthetic of the peaked roof, and it just looks beautiful in your yard.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's talk seasonality just a little bit. If I have a flow hive and I live in a warm place like where you are, do I leave that flow, do we call it box?
Yeah, you can call it a super.
Do we leave the flow super on all year? And if I'm in a cold climate, am I taking that off in the winter?
So it's common, as you know, in those places that get a long, cold winter to reduce the size of the hive to make it a bit easier on the colony. But what you're doing is you're also juggling honey stores to survive through that time. And if you're way up north, then you may find you need quite a lot of honey stores for your bees to survive. So most people are feeding them up if they need to prior to the long winter. Whether you take the flow super off will depend on, I guess, how big your hive is already. If you have just a single brood box and a single super on, you might decide to leave it on so the bees can forage on the remaining honey that's left in it. and stay alive during the winter. However, if you're going to do that, you should remove the queen excluder so that your queen isn't left behind as that cluster moves up and consumes the remaining stores in your flow frames. Now, the flow frames won't be an issue in a really cold winter. They'll be completely fine, so you can choose to leave them on. However, a lot of beekeepers do take the flow super off in those regions because they might have two boxes underneath that, and they decide to reduce it to two box colony. So you've got maybe a double brood, or you might have a brood box and just an ideal on top of it to survive the winter. And local knowledge is key, but you can configure it any way you like. There's no right or wrong. What we find in those really cold regions is that people like perhaps a single brood box, and I might go for the 10 frame size, which we call the flow 7 because flow frames are a bit wider, then an ideal on top of that, and then perhaps a super on top of that. So the colder regions can use an ideal box as a honey barrier and therefore not need an excluder. Then you might decide to remove the flow super for winter and just leave them with the ideal and the brood. So that becomes a popular configuration in the colder areas as well.
I think it'd be a good idea to get in touch with beekeepers in your area already using flow hives, see what's working for them, connect with that group. Totally makes sense. I was recently at Apomondia over in Copenhagen and happened to walk by your booth and saw your new super lifter. And I went, oh God, that thing is pretty cool. Would you tell everybody what that is? I know it's a little bit hard to explain, so maybe just tell us what it does and we'll figure out how to get some video in.
Yeah, so my father and I set our minds to solving the next big thing as we see it in beekeeping, and that's lifting the heavy boxes. No one likes it. It's a hard job. It's something that's prohibitive for going and looking after your colonies. You know, you've got to get into that bottom box. You got to lift potentially a number of supers off. And we thought, hang on, can't we just make something simple here? But it was surprisingly hard to come up with something simple, something that would fit in a bag and something that would be easily transferable from hive to hive. So we riddled away for years with drawer sliders, with things like, I don't know if you know the AZ hives that have the frames that pull out,
yeah,
contraptions like that, ones that had the box below, the top ones would jack up and the box below would then slide out, all sorts of quite complex contraptions. And we thought, well, let's see if we can come up with a simple thing we can attach to the hives as they are. So that led us to where we ended up with something we walk up to the hive with, and in 10 seconds you can have the hive open like a box, if you like, with the top box, or there might be two supers on top laden with honey, and you can then easily tip them over and begin beekeeping. And the contraption itself, that we call a super lifter, is also a stand for those boxes. And I've actually, this one behind me here, you can see. Now, I might have to pull the headphones out for a second. This is the super lifter. So it fits in a little bag like that and folds up into a very neat little thing that you can just move from hive to hive. Now, I can just walk up to my hive, and the only modification you need to make to a flow hive or a conventional Langstroth hive is these stronger low point screws, if you like. And what that does is allow you then connect on your lifter like this, just by folding the upper arms onto the low point screws. Then you can lift this like it's a handle, if you like, and roll it around. So I still haven't really bent down, but what I've got there is now a hive that's ready to open like a box, right? And that saves an incredible amount of weight, and you're straight into your brood nest. And what people are really enjoying is that putting the box back on is often, you know, you're waddling up with this big, heavy box and you usually just have to drop it. There's no other way around it. And that's a bit of, you know, it's hard to then get it in line. You've crushed a whole bunch of bees, but you've got this beautiful controlled method where the only place it's landing is here. So that's the only spot you need to sweep bees out of the way. And then if we come back to this side, you've got as slow as you like, gentle closure here where we can use a bee brush or some smoke to get the bees out of the way as we close it. And that just gives you this perfect landing, if you like. And then you're onto your next hive like that.
So a couple other questions that I had. You mentioned you can use that with Langstroth or Flow Hive. Can we use it with 8 or 10 frame supers?
Yes, absolutely. 8 or 10 frames. You can even mix up ideal boxes in the configuration as well.
So, and we can use it with deeps, mediums, whatever we can come up with. Okay.
Yes, you can. It's just about configuring your screw position, your load point screws in the right place for the lifter to then lift. And you can also, one added thing we have is for when you've got a really heavy few boxes on top, then we have some extension handles that clip on, which give you an even easier lift again. And if you've got a stack of hives, usually the propolis of the bees glue them together, but we also have some nice brass toggle latches to really hold those boxes together to make sure they don't come apart if you're then tipping them over. And one really common question we get, right, is how come the honey doesn't come out? And it's because we're tipping it in the plane of the frame. So if you like, the cells are just moving from facing this way where the bees are depositing honey, turning around that 90 degrees. So you don't get any nectar spilling out as you roll that box over.
Now, a beginner might also think, well, wait a minute. You're taking that box, you're full of bees, you're turning it up 90 degrees. Do the bees care? Doesn't that bother them? And I can tell you, no, it does not bother them. In fact, it's a good thing to do that sometimes because you want to see underneath those frames. You want to see if any queen cells are being developed under there. There may be honey, propolis, whatever, sticking everything together. So from time to time, it's actually a good thing to do so you can clean that stuff up if you need to.
Absolutely, yeah. And the way the contraption makes a nice little stand is great. And we don't find we ever get the bees crossing between the brood box and the super. So we haven't found any issues where the queen's moving from one to the other because we've put a little distance across the brackets from your brood box to your supers.
Cedar, you, like everybody that comes on the show, gets the opportunity to tell a fun, wild, and crazy beekeeping story. Have you thought of anything? I warned you a little earlier.
I've got plenty of them, actually.
It can be more than one.
Let's start with one related to the super lifter. And that's my father and I were doing all sorts of experiments, and we had contraptions on hives, and we're at my place and the hives are on a slope. I've got 40 hives under a row of trees, but it's sloped there. This is going back 6 years ago. So we're working on this lifter for a long time, actually. And we had 2 10 frame boxes totally laden with honey, a gabled roof on top, full of honey as well. So a lot of weight. And our prototype lifter actually gave way. So you can imagine what happened next. All hell broke loose and the hive itself fell down, ripped our contraption apart and continued to roll down the hill.
Oh man, I need video of that.
And this is when you really wish you had a proper bee suit on. The bees did not like that. And I kept pretty wild bees at the time as well. That was definitely a bit of an inventing moment gone wrong.
So what did you learn from it to improve from that prototype to the next one?
Yes, we learned that we needed something that was a stronger mounting point onto the hive, which is why we came up with these load point screws, which are really quite strong, and they're longer than normal screws as well, so they go deep into the timber, enabling a much stronger attachment point.
The lifter itself, it's solid steel, right?
It is. It's aluminium, so it's an all metal construction. When you've got that thing set up right, you can jump on it and it's solid. The time when you can get into issues is if you have not attached your brackets properly and you go to do a lift with one side disconnected. So watch out for that.
Make sure you set it up right. All right, Cedar, it's been a ton of fun. I need to get down to Australia sometime. We had somebody on the show recently from Kangaroo Island, and he was really entertaining too. And it'd be fun to go and see some of these sites down under. Hey, last thing. Tell us, what is it about honeybees and beekeeping that you love?
So for me, it's this fascinating learning journey that never stops. You think you know everything when you start out, but in actual fact, it's the other way around. The more you learn, the more there is to learn. So that keeps you pretty engaged all the way. And as you build more knowledge, you have more questions. So it's this beautiful space of curiosity and a never-ending learning journey that keeps going. And I'm learning so much from our amazing global community about bees in every part of the world. The other big thing is I really like the way they're intertwined with us as humans and the way that we need enough bees to do our pollination. Otherwise, we lose a lot of food off our supermarket shelves. Humans have taken the honeybee wherever they've gone because they're such extreme little pollinators. In fact, a single hive could pollinate 50 million flowers in a day, and that's just unbelievable. We don't have anything else to replace that function. So it's really important to have enough beekeepers to look after enough bees to keep our whole system going. So that's a really rewarding thing, is to be part of that and be part of a global community doing a function that's so integral to pollination, not only of our agricultural pursuits, but beyond that, to the very matrix of life that we completely depend on.
Wow, beautiful. All right. Cedar Anderson, Flow Hive, thank you a ton for being with me today.
Thank you very much for having me, Eric.
Thanks for joining us on Bee Love Beekeeping, presented by Man Lake. If you like this content, I hope you'll share it with a friend, follow and subscribe to this podcast, and even sign up for our newsletter at beelovebeekeeping.com. Also, just a shout out to Vita Bee Health for their support. We appreciate them. Vita's Varroa Control range of products includes Apistan, Apigard, and now Varroxan, extended release oxalic acid strips. Thanks, guys. And remember, if you're not just in it for the honey or the money, you're in it for the love. See you next week.